of the Subcommittee of Ways and Means General Government. This morning we've got a couple of bills before us. We're going to have a public hearing on House Bill 3442 relating to wines, and I think that's where we'll start, is with that public hearing this morning. Representatives Patridge and Johnson are excused, and Senator Winters will be with us shortly. So with that, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3442. We have Gary Conklin signed up. Gary, if you'd like to come forward on House Bill 3442, and I've also called and invited Representative Doyle, and as much as it is his legislation, he did talk to me just immediately before our meeting today. Gary?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Gary Conkling, representing the Oregon Wine Growers Association. I have appeared before the subcommittee earlier, talked a little bit about some of the funding provisions that relate to this effort, but let me start from the beginning and give you a background about what House Bill 3442 does. For the last couple of years, as the Oregon wine industry has faced intensified competition from not only domestic wine producers, but international ones as well, who have come into the state and in the country with very aggressive marketing efforts, it's become apparent to leaders of Oregon's wine industry that they needed to develop a more unified, strengthened voice, particularly in and around research and marketing issues. The Oregon Wine Advisory Board, which, as you'll recall from my previous testimony, is the equivalent of our industry's Commodity Commission, is currently affiliated with, or actually part of, the Oregon Department of Agriculture. And there's also other groups that have been involved or that represent the industry. So after an extensive consultation process that was statewide, a number of meetings, an industry that is typified by very small producers, many of the members of my association just grow grapes. They actually don't produce the wine. There are twice as many vineyard operators in the state as there are wineries, but there are growing numbers of both. Almost all of them are small by any measure. In any case, through this consultation process, a conceptual design was developed for a new statewide organization that would be called the Oregon Wine Board. And House Bill 3442 is, in fact, the legislation that creates the Oregon Wine Board in the manner by which the consensus of the industry was developed. Some of its critical provisions are that the board would be appointed by the governor. The idea behind this is that there's more prestige behind a gubernatorial appointment, and that it would provide a chance for some of the leaders of Oregon's wine industry to resume part of their role in leading the industry's efforts. What is also contemplated is that the coordination of research and marketing efforts, which are, again, what the Oregon Wine Advisory Board has done, continue in the new Oregon Wine Board. And, in fact, provisions were written into this that the Wine Board will develop a strategic plan that represents issues of statewide significance for the industry. And that will include both what it should do to pursue research as well as marketing efforts. That's principally what the legislation does. I can give you more details. There is one change that was being negotiated as we came out of the House Rules Committee. The industry had proposed that the strategic plan be approved by the governor, since the governor was the person who would appoint the members. The governor's office was aware of this provision, considered the arguments that we made, and after House Rules moved the bill here, communicated to the industry through myself that it preferred that the governor's assignment as being the approver of the strategic plan be replaced by a state agency. And that agency that was determined would be the Economic and Community Development Department. I dutifully had amendments submitted to Legislative Council, which I actually have the submitted information right here. We're having trouble finding it this morning, but in any case, I'm glad to supply it to you and the committee today. All it does is actually substitute the director of the Economic and Community Development Department for the governor, and this is at the governor's request. It was done with prior consultation with Marty Brantley and others in the department. We also, incidentally, have been in close contact with the Department of Agriculture, and I want to emphasize on the record that the changes that are contemplated here by having the Oregon Wine Board become a semi-independent commission as opposed to part of a state agency, as well as a change in who the maybe oversight agency will be, are not done out of any animosity or even problem with the Department of Agriculture. It represents, I think, a sense of differing needs of what where the agency is at in terms of its development. And frankly, because the agency, the industry faces severe marketing challenges, the opportunity to participate more aggressively in Brand Oregon and other strategies that the department is pursuing probably is the best fit for where we're at today. Our research activities are, generally speaking, conducted by Oregon State University, and we have a direct relationship with oenologists and other scientists at the university. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Are there questions for Mr. Conklin? So, Gary, if I understand your amendments, then, and we're getting those copied right now, where we see the governor as being the in charge of making appointments, this moves to the director of the OECD?
Mr. Chair, the appointments would still be made by the governor. There was a provision that was added. Again, going back, this group is effectively our commodity commission. And as you know, there is separate legislation in this body dealing with commodity commission changes in response to a case involving free speech. Because we have a different legislative status. That is to say, the legislature created the Oregon Wine Advisory Board and our funding mechanisms, which were intended from their outset to be funding mechanisms in lieu of voluntary assessments. That was the original arrangement that was put into law.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, if we could, Gary. Relative to the voluntary assessment, all the rest of the commodity commissions are on the basis of assessment, are they not?
Mr. Chairman, that's my understanding.
Okay. And so this would create a commission or an advisory. Well, it would actually create a separate commodity commission, which would be then assessed basically through a general fund assessment, which is the purchases of all wine in the state of Oregon.
Mr. Chair, this is already in law. We were created as effectively a commodity commission as a function of state law. It, in retrospect, it turns out to be fortuitous. As you, what I was preparing to say is that we're not actually part of the Commodity Commission legislation because our status is different. And it was different perhaps coincidentally, but usefully at this point. The different functions are is that we are a creature of statute separately in a different way than other commodity commissions. Our funding mechanisms for research and marketing, which are fundamentally what other commodity commissions do, happens to be in law through tax provisions. But that was part of the understanding when this was created, both the 2 cents on the excise tax for wine as well as the tonnage tax. We also have another characteristic that separates us from other commodity commissions in that we are largely a regulated industry through the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Wineries are licensees. These are all significant issues in the U.S. food case that creates separation and makes our situation somewhat different on the free speech issue. Well, all I was leading back to, and I didn't completely answer your previous question, is the reason why we have inserted language for an agency to approve our strategic plan was at the suggestion of the Attorney General to provide further insulation against the challenge on free speech basis for that purpose. So what our amendment would do is substitute the director of the Economic and Community Development Department to approve only the strategic plan, the annual strategic plan, and that's in this provision, largely at the suggestion of the AG for legal defense purposes. We also will benefit by the advice from the department. I don't mean to minimize that, but I'm trying to give you the correct etymology of how we got to that particular provision in the first place.
So in order to avoid the current consequences of the U.S. Foods case, then by establishing the wine as a separate commodity commission, which receives its annual strategic plan update and input from the OECD, then so far as that commodity group is concerned, that would exclude them from any of the other problems, or they would hope that it would exclude them from the other problems that other commodity commissions are experiencing.
Mr. Chair, the Attorney General's review, which was thorough before we even drafted House Bill 3442, believes that the structure that we have and the provisions that we now have included provide us with very solid defense in such a case.
Okay. Now Gary, I'm going to jump over to page 7 of House Bill 3442 and go down to line 8. It's my understanding that the Wine Advisory Board account, which is presently established, would go under the Wine Advisory, or the Oregon Wine Board is where the current transfer would be made to. Is that your understanding?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Now, there was some testimony from the OLCC folks relative to the original 2 cents and the tonnage. Can you refresh my recollection as to what each of those amounts presently raise or are anticipated to raise in a biennium? Do you remember, Gary?
Mr. Chair, I do, because I just yesterday checked again on the 2 cents for the excise tax. According to Ken Yates, Legislative Revenue Office, in the last year where he has actual numbers, which was the fiscal year 2001, the amount of the wine privilege tax for table wine was $5.8 million. So if you just do some math of dividing that by 67 cents per gallon, you'll come up with basically a penny generates about 87,000, at least it did that year, 87,000 in terms of revenue. We get 2 cents for our wine advisory board, so you're looking at roughly $174,000-$175,000 per year, and that is roughly what we get. As I understand, the tonnage tax, which is, as I mentioned in my previous testimony in this subcommittee, the largest tonnage tax imposed by any wine industry in the country, we generate, as I understand it, something in the neighborhood of about $500,000.
And that's collected, and that's per year?
That's my understanding.
Okay. And that's collected by the OLCC at present against those great growers, the vineyards themselves?
Mr. Chair, let me step back for a moment. I believe the number of the tonnage tax is an annual figure, and there may be people behind me who will correct me if I'm wrong on that. I didn't do my research
okay.
on the tonnage tax yesterday.
So the tonnage tax is about $500,000 a year, plus or minus. I don't have my glasses on to see if any heads or hands are waving wildly. Yay or nay on that. Okay. And that's collected by the OLCC?
Yes, it is. The way it works is that when Oregon vineyard operators bring their either their their juice or their grapes or however it's transmitted to the winery, it effectively gets logged in, and through the processing that the wineries do, that's how the calculations get determined. So that's the funnel point. There is one interesting side note that this bill also deals with, is that sometimes Oregon vineyard operators sell their grape or grape derivative products out of state. And the Oregon Department of Agriculture was actually the tax agent of record for that, because we're moving everything else out of the Department of Agriculture, and the department asked us to not have that residual responsibility. This bill also transfers that responsibility plus the ability to recover costs to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. So it would have responsibility for the entire tax systems that relate to the Oregon.
All tonnage tax, including that tonnage, which is
correct.
For shipment of out-of-state production. And,
that's right.
And that's separate and apart from the 2-cent excise tax.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is the tonnage tax for now.
Right. And it's my understanding then from your testimony, Gary, that the 2-cent excise tax generates about $174,000 to $175,000 a year on the anticipated production, or on anticipated gross sales of wine in the state of Oregon.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And again, I double-checked that yesterday with Mr. Yates at Legislative Revenue, who brought up his exact worksheets, and we looked at the last year where he had actuals, which was fiscal year 2001, and the number of table wine was 5.8 million.
Okay. Now, Gary, I need to confirm with you then that the current 2-cent excise tax, which goes to the wine advisory, how long has that been in place?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's been in place since this entire mechanism was set up, which I recollect was in like the 19... I don't remember the exact... I wasn't here, and I wasn't involved in it, and I don't recall. But it's been in place for some time. And, the construct of this, the tax regime, was to drive dollars both from grape growers as well as wine production into what is effectively our commodity commission.
Okay, but this is more than wine production. It's an excise tax on all wine, including any foreign wines that are sold in the state of Oregon.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Perhaps we could replicate from the department, from the OLCC, some of that earlier testimony, getting us the years that was originally put into. Someone from the department, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Merle Lindsay from the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. I'm the Administrative Services Director. I believe the year that we're looking for here is 1983.
And Merle, was it 2 cents then that was imposed in 19... Merle, were you the one that testified to the tax earlier?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I was the
okay,
one that
testified. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, I did not have down who it was that had spoken to us relative to that tax. And currently, the 2 cents is the same 2 cents today that it was in 1983.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it is.
So for the past 20 years, 2 cents has been collected on all table wines sold in the state of Oregon to assist and transfer to the Oregon Wine Advisory.
Yeah, that's correct as well.
Okay. Now, Merle, it's my understanding that you, and recollection, that you gave us some information about Oregon's wine industry as it relates to today, the penetration of the wine industry itself, the actual grape growers and the viticulturists, I guess, as well as the wine producers. Do you recall that?
Mr. Chairman, I don't recall that testimony.
Okay. Someone gave us information to indicate that wine production in Oregon had, from a fledgling state in 1983, had flourished to the point where we are like number 4 per capita in the nation in wine production. Was that you, Gary? Okay. Gary, can you give us a history then of where we're at today then relative to what the monies have been used for these past 20 years?
I can do that, Mr. Chair. I think the numbers I used were to indicate that Oregon's wine industry has become a significant factor because we have the second largest number of producers of any state in the country.
Second largest number of producers?
Number of producers. And our overall volume is somewhere in the fourth or fifth. Now, you would say from that we're living in the high clover, and I appreciate how you can form that conclusion, and in fact our industry has flourished. But the characteristic that is most notable is that almost all of our wineries are very small. You took our largest wineries, Willamette Valley Vineyards, Bridgeview, King Estate, and you transplanted them into Napa Valley, they would be small wineries. At best, medium, but basically small. We compete against not only individual wineries, names like Gallo and Mondavi and what have you, Kendall Jackson, but we also compete against countries and states that have substantial amounts of marketing money. We barely have enough resources to do tastings annually in some of our major markets where we're trying to expand sales. So I appreciate the, and I understand what this discussion is about. I'm just trying to be honest with you. We have almost no wineries capable of mounting an independent marketing effort on their own brand behalf. Almost all of Oregon wine is branded by Oregon. And the sole source of the marketing budget is what we've just discussed this morning.
Okay.
Each tax and the 2 cents from the excise.
And that has brought us to the point where we are the second largest number of producers in the nation,
right,
in the state of Oregon, and either fourth or fifth in production nationwide.
Right.
Okay. From in 1990 or 1983, I would think that we would probably be amongst the bottom so far as the number of producers. Certainly, very few producers, and nationwide relative to production, we probably weren't anywhere on the charts at that particular point.
Mr. Chair, there's no question that the industry has experienced substantial growth, and we aren't disputing that.
Okay. Well, I just want to make certain that it's my understanding that the 2 cent excise tax was to help us unify and get a strengthened voice for research and marketing, and it sounds like you've done a good job of doing that. There was some question, some concern at the time as to where the money was actually being transferred out of the department and the accountability for it, and that was a concern immediately as to how that off-record transfer was taking place. And then the accountability, but I'm, and by no means does that say that there's been anything inappropriately done by the wine advisory. But to the contrary, sounds like you've done exactly the mission that you set out to do, and that is to vault the Oregon wine industry to amongst the tops in the nation. And I appreciate that. Are there further questions, Senator Winters?
Along that line, does research and development continue as an ongoing process in an industry, even though you're at the kind of second or in production and fourth or fifth in volume? Do you cease doing those activities?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, well, absolutely not. In fact, the stakes become higher. The increasing number of varietals that are coming into the market, all kinds of potential disease, put a great deal of need on the research side, as well as getting the information out through the extension service, which is another part of it, the dissemination of the information. But on the marketing side, we now face that we didn't face in the early 1980s, the assault of Chile wines, Australian wines, people that actively market with substantial budgets in our own backyard. We, for the first time last year, lost market share, not only generally, but in our own state. And so we have wineries, we're not trying to make a big deal out of this and trying to...
Is there a reason for that, Gary? What's happened there?
Mr. Chair, competition. It's intensified, and it is intensifying.
Can I follow up?
Senator?
I noted when I was in California and visited one of the vineyards there that they're also doing some added value or byproduct of particularly grapeseed oils. And I've asked myself the question, you know, if we had the capability of doing the same here in Oregon, is this something that the Winery Advisory Committee, you know, could get into through research and development? It seems to me that that's an opportunity that we're not doing here in Oregon, but I know that they're doing it in California.
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, I think you're exactly on point. This kind of cross-marketing or looking for leveraging is exactly what the industry is pursuing and actually is the reason why the affiliation with the Department of Economic Community Development makes some sense. We market wines in our tasting environments and what have you in connection with food. And there was a lively discussion in the House Rules Committee where this bill came out of. A number of members who talked about looking at cross-marketing, whether it's seafood or other kinds of Oregon products with Oregon wine. And in fact, we're looking forward to do that. We don't have the ability in our budget to do it. We barely have the ability to do, such as I mentioned, some of our major tastings, Pinot camps and other things where we bring writers here to get acknowledgement of our wines. I wished I could tell you that Pinot Noir is what every wine drinker mentions when they sit down to a table. It isn't. It takes a little persuasion and some market advice for them to pick it. We also are trying to brand Pinot Gris, and our Southern Oregon wineries are trying to push Merlot. It is a tough sell. Just take the Merlot for a moment. When you think of where would you get a Merlot, you don't always think of the Rogue Valley. But some of the best in the world is produced there. It just isn't necessarily on the tips of minds. That's what marketing is all about. That's what we're trying to accomplish.
I guess I have some concern on this. On this privilege tax issue and whether or not that has a negative impact on the advisory board to do some of the marketing and some of the things in order to be a little more profitable in the state of Oregon. And so I needed to raise those questions, particularly in looking at some value-added products, because I was in California and I did note that they are doing some value adding there that we're not doing in this state, and which I think we should be doing. The sale of grapeseed oils is huge down there, and I even brought several bottles back up here. My question was, why aren't we doing this in Oregon? I think we're all looking for ways to improve the economy and looking for where we can get value added, and I think that that's something that we really should be seriously considering when we're talking about new avenues. So.
Gary, so that I'm familiar with what it is exactly that we're talking about here, so I can get it down in terms of dollars and cents, the tonnage tax amounts to about $500,000 per year, and the 2-cent excise tax, which is being presently transferred to the Oregon Wine Advisory, amounts to about $174,000-$175,000. The total then per annum is about $675,000 that has been used to operate the commission list for research and marketing. The tax portion of it, the general excise tax portion of it, amounts to, at $174,000-$175,000, about 25% of the total budget of the wine advisory. Is that what we're talking about here?
Mr. Chair, there is some earned income that the Oregon Wine Advisory Board through the sale of some publications and some other things. It's probably closer to the excise portion, probably closer to 20% of
okay.
the total budget.
Right. And that, again, then by way of clarification, that this would be the only of the commodity commissions that I'm aware of, and if you're aware of some others, I need to know what they are, that is coming to the general fund for, in effect, an excise tax on a not just a nationwide product, but a worldwide product to support and that's to continue on with the support as we consider House Bill 3442 to continue the activities of what was formerly the Oregon Wine Commission, which has now become the Oregon Wine Board. Is that...
Mr. Chair, I appreciate how you're characterizing, and I would characterize it slightly differently.
Please.
When the Oregon Wine Advisory Board was established to be effectively the commodity commission for this industry, the mechanisms by which its funding were arranged were through these two tax processes. It was negotiated. So while, yes, it is an excise tax, the 2 cents was added largely to provide the funding for this purpose.
Okay. Has, Gary, in that regard, has the tonnage tax increased? Can you tell me how that's derived? I know very little about it.
Mr. Chair, it's increased as the volume has increased.
But in relationship to the brute number of tons, in relationship to the actual tax imposed on a ton, over the past 20 years it hasn't increased?
My understanding, and I don't have probably every inch of history here, but my understanding is that the tax rate has been constant.
Okay, all right. Did that exist before the 1983 that Mr. Lindsay referred to of the implementation of the 2 cent that was diverted to the wine advisory?
Mr. Chair, again, I don't have enough history to answer that question.
Still just trying to gather some history on it, Gary. I'm not trying to trick you into saying something.
Mr. Chair, I don't take those questions in that light. I'm just trying to be honest with you that I was not representing the industry then, and I don't have as complete a history. I don't know that the industry had any of the current funding mechanisms prior to that time, because they would have required legislative action.
Okay.
There may well have been some voluntary efforts, and again, part of the dilemma for this industry has been just the small size of the wineries.
Okay, but again, going along with my line of questioning, Gary, because I represent a lot of commodity growers in rural Oregon, beef and sugar growers and onion growers and seed growers of various different kinds, and those folks, none of them come to the general fund for any kind of an assessment on markets of any product statewide. Are you aware of any other commodity commission that is coming to a statewide or a nationwide or a worldwide tax on a product that's sold from all over the world in Oregon? Is there any such, and I'm not familiar with all the commodity commissions, Gary.
Mr. Chair, nor am I. I would doubt that they are, because the reason why they have the problem down the hall is because they have voluntary assessments. I wouldn't be surprised that they might come to you and ask you for a different funding mechanism. Like I say, ours was done through a negotiated process at a time when people were interested in helping this winery develop a critical mass to move forward. Understanding that this would be our commodity commission.
Okay.
The truth of the matter is it has fortuitous legs in light of the U.S. Foods case.
Are there other questions? And thank you, Gary, for that explanation and that history lesson. I apologize for not having noted down who said, but I didn't at that time have House Bill 3442 in front of us either. So, I knew there was a tonnage tax. I knew it presented and provided the majority of the funding for the Oregon Wine Commission. But now, with regard to the Oregon Wine Board, if we went straight across and took the tonnage tax, including that which would be done by the Department, or which had formerly been done by the Department of Agriculture, as well as that which is done by the Liquor Control Commission. Did we have any testimony? Let me just ask staff. Did we have any testimony as to the time or energies that are expended here by the department to collect the tonnage tax? It's my understanding, and my recollection of the testimony that was given was that if a dollar was collected, a dollar was transmitted through. Is that your understanding?
Mr. Chair, I don't know. Are you talking about the tonnage tax that OLCC collects? Or
the tonnage tax that OLCC collects.
I would ask the department to testify on that.
I think they did testify, but Merle, do you have a comment there? I'd just like to make sure that my understanding was it was dollar for dollar on the tonnage tax.
Mr. Chairman, again, Merle Lindsay for the record. That is correct. On the tonnage tax, it is transferred dollar for dollar to the Wine Advisory Board.
And do we know how much of that is collected by the OLCC in contrast with that which may have been collected by the Department of Agriculture?
I don't have the precise numbers, but I think Mr. Calkin was right in that it's about $500,000 a year is collected by the Liquor Commission and the Department of Ag, who collects from those vineyards that transmit their grapes outside of the state, is more on the lines of about, I think it's $40,000.
Okay.
$20,000 a year.
Okay. So 500 OLCC collection and then $20,000 per year by the Department of Ag. And Gary, it's your testimony that the Department of Ag should be probably relieved from this entire activity according to this bill and then move everything to the Department of, or the OLCC.
Right. Yes, Mr. Chair. We had consultations with the director and other staff at the Department of Agriculture about this change, which I understand they should speak for themselves are comfortable with. They also asked if we made the change to remove this sort of residual tax collection responsibility, which is a very reasonable request. I talked with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, and it agreed to accept that part of the task also on a reimbursed basis because it does involve a different type of a collection process. Our industry, because it's relatively small, is fairly familiar with when grape derivative products are sold out of state, and so I think we can effect a partnership with the commission on how to identify it and then subsequently collect it.
Merle, how many tonnage returns are there filed annually, or tonnage reports that are filed annually? Are we talking about 50 of them? Or are we talking about 500?
Mr. Chairman, it correlates with the number of wineries we have here in the state, and I believe that's
140, 200.
Wow, it's grown a lot. 200. So we anticipate around 200 tax returns on the tonnage.
About 200 vineyards. The
200
reporting.
Right.
Mr. Chair, if I might just add, the way the tonnage tax effectively works is when the wine or when the grapes are logged in with the wineries. I think it's the wineries that are reporting to the OLCC. There are many more vineyard operators.
Okay.
But effectively, the reporting is through the wineries.
So then, at some process of settlement, then I'm going to guess between the winery and the viticulturist that there's some settlement sheet that shows the assessment of the tax being collected against the amount of the delivery. And that's some sort of a net settlement sheet between the purchaser and the vendor of the grapes and the grape juice.
Some kind of a
similar to what we probably have in the slaughterhouse. I'm gonna guess.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. The winery is responsible for paying the entire tax, but when they purchase the grapes from the vineyards, I believe that 50% of that tax is paid by the vineyard. So it's deducted from the amount that the winery would pay the vineyard.
Okay. Okay. Are there further questions? Let me just for the benefit of the members, so that and Gary, you know exactly where I'm headed in this process. And that is, it's my understanding that the co-chairs would like to go ahead and now that the viticulturists and the vineyards, wineries, and production folks in Oregon are at the point where they're at, they would like to go ahead and say, fine, the 2 cent excise tax needs to come back to the general fund and be expended in the general fund. I still have a question. If there are a couple of hundred vineyards or 100 wineries that are actually reporting, if we don't have some actual cost by the OLCC in operating that transfer, but there's at this particular point been, to my knowledge, no actual labeling of a cost and amount that has been demonstrated here to collect the 500 or the other 20,000 through the Department of Agriculture. but certainly there are some costs in doing that, and that doesn't play into the discussion at all when we're just talking about collecting and distributing for the under the current bill, House Bill 3442. But it's my understanding that the co-chairs would like very much for us to now capture that 2 cents back into the general fund, and as opposed to transferring that 2 cents as established under the bill to the wine board under the Oregon Revised Statute, that it would actually come back to the general fund. And if that represents 20% of the amount that the commission is presently charging or operating on as an overall cost on an annual basis, then that either it would reduce its overall expenditures or it would assess its members in forms of tonnage tax, increased tonnage tax, in order to meet its obligations. Not being familiar with the commissions themselves, do they have any oversight by other agencies within the Department of Agriculture, or within budget oversight is what I'm looking for, within the Ways and Means process, Gary, that you're aware of?
Mr. Chair, let me try to deal with that question, then let me answer
please
first what the real issue is all about. The Department of Agriculture has a relationship with the Oregon Wine Advisory Board because the Oregon Wine Advisory Board is part of the Department of Agriculture currently. So, it, for example, its employees are part of the department's budget. And to the extent that you look at its budget in whatever detail, you have that level of budgetary oversight. The tax money has effectively, as I think we discussed in my previous appearance, been transmitted largely through a continuing appropriation. And so, to the extent that there hasn't been a huge amount of sort of a line-by-line review of the Oregon Wine Advisory Board budget, it has been largely a function of that, I suspect. What's contemplated under 3442 is that the Oregon Wine Board will have very similar kind of budgeting authority, and it will, under the now provisions that we're proposing here, have a strategic plan, that is to say, how it intends to budget and spend its dollars, be subject to review and approval or disapproval by the Director of Economic and Community Development. As to the first and probably the more underlying question, I would be remiss if I would say that the Oregon wine industry would not strongly oppose the removal of the 2 cent excise tax. I can't tell you how strongly we feel about it. I'm sure you could anticipate that. We would view it as really a breach of the original arrangement by which this board, which is our commodity commission, was created. Yes, it is an excise tax, but it was imposed, that is, the 2 cents were imposed to provide money through winery production into this effort. It would be a substantial blow at an awkward moment for our industry. And I can't tell you any more than that, is that we wouldn't take it kindly. We don't get the vote, you do, but I just want to be as clear as I can that it's a fairly serious issue with us.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to follow on Mr. Conklin to make sure that I understand the math. You and I have talked about this a couple of times, and I'm frankly struggling with it. You just characterized the withdrawal of the excise tax as a substantial blow at an awkward moment. Quantify the dollar amount for me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the 2 cents equals roughly about $175,000 a year that comes to us. That is, that's what the 2 cents equals. And that represents about 20% of the Oregon Wine Advisory Board's current budget, which goes roughly 50% to research and the other 50% to marketing Oregon wine. Those are its principal two activities.
Follow up.
At the risk of treading in dangerously thin ice, when you talk about a substantial blow at an awkward moment, I'm thinking about an industry that I think of as a fairly
vigorous industry right now. There's been a great deal of focus on the quality of Oregon wines, and I'm trying to quantify the loss of the $175,000 a year against the substantial blow that other agencies, commissions, institutions are facing in this budget environment. I mean, I'm trying to quantify what's a $1.3 million blow to the Historical Society or the Commission for the Blind. I'm just trying to get a sense of scope. And if it's $175,000 that benefits the industry in terms of research and marketing, at what point is the industry able to step up and fill that gap when the benefits inure so clearly to them?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I don't envy your assignment as legislators to have to balance the decisions that you have to make, and I empathize with you greatly, and I wouldn't even pretend to try to make such a balancing test on the road that you have to look at. The arguments I think here are this is part of an arrangement that has been in place for some time to provide the funding for our commodity commission. Now, whether or not it ought to be changed or should be changed, to the extent that it should be changed, it strikes me that it should have been done in a more consultative process than perhaps the process that we have. And I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just trying to say that it's very difficult for the industry to make a change on such an abrupt turn. And as for the industry being vigorous, yes, it is vigorous. But as I mentioned, I think before you got here, for the first time in the last at least a decade or more, Oregon wineries lost market share, including in Oregon. We have wineries in southern Oregon who have inventories that are dangerous. Some of them are difficult. They're having difficulty moving their products.
Is that follow, Mr. Chair? Is that not though endemic in the industry right now? I mean, you see the ads on the TV, and forgive me for saying this in front of any vintners that might be in the group, but $2 Chuck, and the fact that the whole industry is right now suffering from a surfeit of grapes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, well, that's a separate problem. The growth of vineyard operations, we do have at the moment more grapes being grown in Oregon than Oregon wineries can actually bottle, produce, and sell. I think that's a kind of a separate problem that sometimes you get a little bit out of supply and demand. The bigger problem is what we're competing against, and you do see ads today because as I understand, when I look at consumer charts, the market share of wine, now I'm not talking about Oregon wine, I'm talking about wine as a percent of alcoholic beverages consumed, continues to go up. Our market share at the same time is going down. That's the trend line that has us concerned. Moreover, we have very few tools to deal with it. We don't have a winery that can just all of a sudden go on television and do some ads to try to buck up its identity. There just isn't anybody that has that bandwidth to do it. We're all small wineries. This is about the only way we have to push Oregon wine is to push them correctly.
I hear a clarion call to drink more wine.
Even now, I feel like I could use a glass.
And I want to make certain that as Oregon's share of the overall wine, that's from Oregon vineyards, that if we're actually producing the grapes and shipping them to other states to be processed, then there's pretty good likelihood that Oregon's share of overall grape production is not down, or is it in fact down?
Mr. Chair, actually, there's a substantial problem with vineyard operators who haven't been able to sell their grapes this year. It's an industry issue that we're attempting to deal with. What is sold out of state is relatively minor. It happens here and there, but it's not. It wouldn't be much more than a footnote, and it probably isn't going to be.
All right. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Conkling, you had mentioned that we were probably second in terms of number of operations and fourth or fifth in terms of production. Isn't One of the realities, though, is if you go to those first or second or third, the volume of production, you can be fourth in something and still be well behind first and second.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, that's right. And if you look at California and divide it up, California, we'd go down several chunks just for each division. You know, I'm not trying to say woe is us, but I'm just trying to give you a candid snapshot of our industry. We have achieved what we've achieved on the backs of a lot of small producers and a lot of small vineyard operators, which is a good thing. It's a terrific thing. It's just very difficult when you're in a marketing environment dominated by brand names that can be on television and promote their product in other ways.
And would it be fair to say, and I'm not trying to, that your industry produces a lot of jobs, and a lot of them in rural areas of the state?
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, almost by definition, we're in rural areas because we're farmland.
Follow-up, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I assume that those jobs, people are paying taxes to this state. I would hate to lose some of your marketing effort and end up losing jobs in this state. I'll just put it frankly.
Thank you very much, Senator. And again, coming from the most rural district of the state of Oregon, where very few table grapes are sold, I am concerned about the agriculture industry as well. But I think we've just about worked House Bill 3442 in this public hearing to the point where even I will condescend to go have a glass of wine.
Mr. Chair, let me treat you, and we'll make sure that it's a good Pinot Noir.
Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 3442. We do have a quorum now so that we can go ahead and receive the information on work session from Legislative Fiscal on Senate Bill 5530. So with that, I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 5530 dealing with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. We're going to do this for the benefit of receiving information from the Legislative Fiscal Office and receiving their recommendation. Ms. Jordan represents Legislative Fiscal Office, and I neglected to say that Karen Segrist represents us at the desk today. So,
Mr. Chair, just by way
Representative Johnson.
Just by way of housekeeping, I want to apologize for being late. Representative Patridge and I were in the same meeting, and he remains. So,
Whipping boy, huh? Crawling or standing? Okay, let's please proceed, Jay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have at your place with a memo from LFO. Dated May 23rd, outlining the LFO recommendations for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. The first table is a historical view of the agency's budget from their 1999-2001 actual through the governor's balanced budget with LFO recommended changes. The first item for discussion are the technical adjustments to reduce the budget, a total of $844,801. We're reducing $192,290 in inflation, $566,160 for the employee compensation freeze, $30,782 for the Attorney General assessment, and $55,569 for the DAS assessment, which totals $844,801. And below that, you will find information about the kinds of inflation that were removed from the agency's budget and the merit increases. On the second page are vacancy savings report. The agency has a total of 46 vacancies as of March 11th. And of those, 10 were identified as critical to health, welfare, and public safety. 6 are in the recruitment process or now filled. 4 of those are being backfilled as developmental assignments with a retiree or a temporary person. 16 are necessary to maintain essential program oversight. Of those, 8 are backfilled with a retiree or temporary person. 5 are in a recruitment process or now filled. 3 are seasonal positions. And 19 were included in policy option packages. 14 of those have been reduced in the governor's balanced budget, and 6 were not approved. So those were kind of duplicates in the report that we received. 1 was being held to fund priorities. Of those, I am recommending 2 things. 1, that the agency eliminate 1 of those vacant positions. That's a position in the administrative and support section that assists with general services in purchasing, motor pool contracting, field office leases, that sort of thing. And the second thing that I am recommending on the vacancies is to place a temporary hold on filling 6 positions. There are 7 listed there. 1 of those is now filled, so we would have to take number 4700521 out permanently until the new director evaluates and restructures the organization with a goal toward flattening that may include reassigning duties and responsibilities, reclassifying to lower level non-management positions, and eliminating. And the agency is to report to the emergency board by January 2004 the results of that review, and the agency can backfill the positions with temporary employees until the emergency board accepts that report. So before
Senator Winters?
On the vacancy positions, what is the average length of time that they've been vacant?
I can check real quick. I think. Well, if they were vacant in March, let's see.
Were there any that were vacant more than 9 months?
No. Well, yes, some of the manager positions were vacant more than 9 months, and those that have been eliminated, of course, are vacant longer. There was one manager vacant 9 months and one manager vacant.
So the agency could function for 9 months without a manager?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, what the agency did was they backfilled those positions. They moved people up in the organization that were at lower level positions, and somewhere over in the warehouse are vacant positions as they made some changes to allow, and they backfilled those with temporaries. So no, they can't be without those positions filled. They have covered them through other means. Covered the job responsibilities.
Senator Winters,
I guess I was trying to figure out what's going on inside the agency when you have a vacancy, so you move up and then you take and you put temps in the warehouse.
Well, they're temporarily moving them up, and what's happening in the agency is that one of the vacant positions is the director, and the commission would like the new director to have an opportunity to fill those, choose their own managers, since those positions are now vacant. And they're covering those responsibilities with other staff.
That's these other 6 of the 7 that you mentioned in budget note number 1.
That's correct. And the other part of that is it's probably easier for them to get the skills that they need for the lower level positions than it is for the specialized skills that the managers need to have at the higher levels.
So the total, even with the vacancy, of a total of 46 vacancies, we're coming up with 6 actual, and those are temporary holds as opposed to permanent holds.
That's correct.
We're actually coming up with 1. Yes, sir.
We have an actual. We actually have 1. Yes.
Actual 1 reduction. The rest are of the 46. Are being replaced, or there'll be 6 of those that will get a temporary hold on. But other than that, you're right. You've basically been able to find 1 job efficiency in the OLCC. Okay, continued recommendations.
All of those recommendations on the policy packages. Package 091 is due to the House Bill 5100, Section 2 reductions, eliminating 11 FT. E, and reducing personal services, $1.2 million, and services and supplies, $147,000. I'm recommending that we restore two positions in the server education program for a total cost of $267,581. The server education program is self-funded through license fees and are technically other funds that shouldn't be included in the reductions. The industry, the server education, the servers are paying for this program, and we need to continue providing that service.
Ms. Jordan, was an analysis done, since I know that more and more, I know in our industry, we're doing a lot more training and service education, which should take some of the pressure off of OLCC. Was there any study done as to what's being done outside of OLCC to get people trained and served?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, I believe that the server educators are, and by and large, private providers, but they have to be certified by the OLCC in order to provide that training, and there's certain information that they have to include in their training, that has their curriculum has to be approved, and that is where the cost is involved in the server education program, as well as collecting the fees primarily.
Has there been that much of an increase in the number of applications in this particular area during this economic downturn in the restaurant industry?
Mr. Chair, I see somebody nodding back there. I believe that it's been holding pretty much steady, not declining in any way. There is an increase, but I don't think that it's significant.
But I guess that's my point, because if it's holding pretty steady, if it isn't growing, then why do we need another position?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we don't need another position. We just don't need to reduce what they have.
And basically, because it is, in fact, self-funded, the server education program is self-funded.
Mm-hmm.
Is there some portion of the server education program that is not being self-funded, or that is being being subsidized from general funds here?
Mr. Chair, no. It is 100% self-funded.
All right, thank you. And this then continues.
Unlike other programs.
Right, this then continues.
At the same level.
The 100% self-funding for the server education program. Package number 206.
206 is an increase in expenditure limitation to capture overtime payments for services that the OLCC would provide to the University of Oregon, Oregon State University's sports programs. And these monies will be paid by the university athletic programs. That's $15,352, and I'm recommending approval. And then package 006 is an LFO package. It's a technical adjustment to carry forward expenditure limitation from the current biennium to the next biennium to complete the installation of a document management and workflow system in the regulatory program. That's $394,000, and I'm recommending approval of that.
That's the carryover of what was left unaccomplished then, and or is anticipated in the current biennium.
Correct. The Department of Administrative Services, IRMD, asked the department to split the project into two chunks so that they could move a little bit slower, and this is the piece that won't be finished by the end of this biennium. It's being carried forward into the next biennium.
Okay. Budget notes.
Two budget notes. The budget note number two is the directing the OLCC to work with retail liquor agents through the Agents Advisory Council to develop a financial incentive distribution plan that rewards agents for sales that exceed the legislatively adopted budget forecast. Under this plan, agents will receive 50% of the sales that exceed the annual forecast, less variable costs, which include the cost of goods sold, licensee discounts, and bank card fees. In essence, it's a bonus system where anything above the forecast at the time the budget is adopted would be, and any increase in revenue beyond that then would be split 50% to the general fund, 50% to the agents, and this has been approved by the co-chairs. The payments would be made as a special bonus outside of the normal agents' compensation system at the end of each fiscal year of the biennium, and the commission would report to the emergency board no later than April 2004 the details of the plan and request expenditure limitation if necessary to implement it.
Okay. Representative Johnson?
A question and a comment, I guess. The first question is, I don't understand from this budget note how this would work. If you've got a certain group of the universe of agents who are selling a great deal in excess of the budgeted numbers, others that are not performing as well, do they all participate in the bonus program, or how do you, will it be done on an agent-by-agent basis?
That's an excellent question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, that would be part of the details that would be worked out with the agents and the OLCC's meetings with the Agents Advisory Council. The agency has suggested that that should be split, that should be spread across all the agents because the smaller agents in the rural parts of the state and smaller liquor stores aren't going to be increasing their sales much just because of where they are located. And so there would the agents have also expressed some interest in making that a little bit more equitable for all the agents. So I can't tell you today what that would be or what formula they would use.
That's a perfect segue into my next comment. I see that the very fine line that exists between the legislature giving guidance to the agency through budget notes and the legislature micromanaging. And I'm a little curious as to how the percentage was arrived at absent any kind of financial pro forma. I mean, it seems to me that we've just arbitrarily picked a percentage without really seeing how the whole picture would develop. And I'm very concerned that if there is a process developed that rewards the high volume, not even the high volume, let's assume by a percentage of sales, you have a guy out in Ontario who has raised his proportional quota. I'm just trying to figure out how suddenly geography and deciding what's small and what's large is going to decide who gets compensated and who doesn't, and if you're rewarding the racehorses along with the other guys that haven't performed. This strikes me as fraught with some details, and I'm quite surprised that we would dictate a percentage in a budget note rather than leaving it to the agency to work out in their discretion through the Agents Advisory Council.
I think, Representative Johnson, I would like to see some amplification to this particular budget note. What it is that we're trying to do, of course, Commission Chair Lang has expressed a 9% rate up from the 8.54%. At present, the agents would like to see us draw closer to 9.5%. And I think that what this we need to do is to go ahead and at least put some of the percentages into the budget note of where these amounts have come from, so that the 50% that could be dedicated to additional sales or additional compensation, agents' compensation, above and beyond that which is presently projected in the 8.54%, could in fact start to arrive us at a percentage in the vicinity of 9% and greater of actual overall agents' compensation, the desire of which would be to make sure that this is, in fact, benefiting those agents who go out and open their stores, expand their sales, work in conjunction with the Domestic Spirits Council of the United States in expanding the higher end, the more, not necessarily selling more alcohol per capita, but actually selling the higher end and working on those, as you're using your term, the racehorses, but they get in there, and once they perform, then those folks could anticipate higher overall revenues as agents' compensation for a job performed above and beyond that which is presently forecast. I say that taking into consideration also that for some of the first times, we haven't necessarily performed outside of the forecast like agents have done in the past, recognizing that a couple of months here, and some of that may have been agent-driven by closing stores on Sundays when they or reducing the hours back. And I think that that can be overcome by making certain that we do have a budget note, that it is the legislative intent, particularly of this particular subcommittee, that it's our desire that the desires of Commission Chairman Lange be addressed, and that we do that in part through any of the kinds of savings that we can accomplish here in other budget cuts. But here, unfortunately, it's all sales driven. Or correct me if I'm wrong. This increase is sales driven. The way that it's presently presented in Budget Note 2, is that correct, Susie?
Correct. And I would also point out, Mr. Chair, that the Commission has all of the authority to make any changes to the agent's compensation. And the only control that the legislature holds on that is the amount of the expenditure limitation in their budget. And so to get into too much detail and try to dictate to the Commission how this would be.
I'm not arguing for that level of detail.
Right.
I'm arguing for less detail.
Less detail is where she's going.
I'm arguing
for more detail to basically dignify the requests that Chair Lange is making in his public statements, as well as what the requests are of the agents, the commission agents themselves.
And Mr. Chair, and I think the co-chair's direction here is that they don't want more than 50% going away from the general fund.
This isn't a hill I'll die on. I'm just concerned, regardless of the subject matter, at what point legislative committees begin micromanaging agencies. And then secondly, the variables in this budget note are rather stunning to me. If the Agents Advisory Council and the Commission cannot come to resolution, who do they come back to? The current rate is the 8.54. Chair Lange has talked about 9. The agents want 9.5. Let's assume that they're a phenomenal performance. You could then come in and make a case that it ought to be 10 or 10.5. I'm simply trying to figure out how this budget note is going to work. I'm persuaded by the discussion that we've had so far, but it raises some concerns.
One other overall ability that the commission has within its latitudes, my understanding is also their ability to increase prices without any consultation with the legislature as well. So if they decided that they weren't drawing close enough through other means, the commission has the ability to add 5 to 7 cents per bottle to try and spur on the overall revenues, which would enhance both commissioned agents as well as the general fund. Senator Devlin, then Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I share Representative Johnson's concerns about micromanaging, but I think one of the basic discussions that we've had is some discussion in terms of the adequacy of agency compensation, some agreement between the committee and the chair of the commission that there are some questions about that adequacy, and I'm just trying to find some way to ensure that there's actually going to be something done in terms of that adequacy. And one of the things I'm having trouble understanding, and this may be just fairly clear to other people in the room, is can you take the forecasts of revenue and extrapolate that back from that, the forecast statewide of revenue, individual performance measures for each store, and then say this is what percentage you were supposed to do of that forecast, and then say when you go beyond that, that you're subject to this additional compensation. I mean, that's what it appears to be implying to me, and the implication of this is that if you exceed forecasted revenue, or is it if all sales exceed forecasted revenue?
That's what I don't understand.
Susan, does your Excel spread show us what you anticipate? I know that you've got a 50% of net available resources in your spreadsheet there.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this plan, this proposal was raised by the agents' advocates. And what they had asked for, a 50% distribution between the general fund and the agents. And what I did was I did a quick evaluation of what the impact of that would be on the general fund should there be a distribution to agents over the forecast. So based on that information, the spreadsheet that you have in front of you takes the forecasted revenue at the governor's balanced budget level and takes it at the very the top of it, shows you what the net profit available for distribution is after you take out agents' comp, cost of goods, and allowance for discounts. For the first $1 million, then, of increase over the governor's balanced budget forecast, so that would be on all sales, I'm Senator Devlin, and you take out their base compensation of 8.54, they get $85,400, and then take from that the cost of the liquor and allowance for discounts. Then the net profit available for further distribution is $420,000. 50% of that then would be available for the general fund, and 50% of that would be available to go back to agents. And then that's the piece that would be distributed to those agents.
And the formula for that distribution simply isn't decided at this point.
That's
no.
correct.
No, that's right.
There are no details for that. It is a concept that needs to be worked out with the agency.
Now, it's my understanding that the Agency Advisory Council works closely in conjunction with the commission, do they not?
Yes.
Okay. I don't think that we heard any testimony that that there were any major disagreements. I think that Chair Lang opened the door to the opportunity to go ahead and to work more within the guidelines of the direction that the agents' advisory council were taking the commission relative to trying to increase the amount of commission representation. I'm sorry, Senator Winter.
There's a couple of questions, and I share some of the concerns that my colleagues have raised as to both the micromanaging and I know we're trying to get here to increase the compensation for the agents, which we would all like to see occur, because if I go back to just the comment when we started the budget overviews, one of the issues that was raised is that compensation has not been increased, and yet the cost of inflation and the cost of doing business for the agents have. And to try to come at a way that based on competition and pushing sales is what I'm seeing here. That so then what happens if you're to those agents are those facilities who are not as successful as those that may be in new stores or who may be in the metropolitan Portland area or in areas where you may have a higher income level. What happens to those agents? I'm concerned about the compensation issue.
Mr. Chair and Senator Winters, that's, what's not being addressed here is the base compensation and the co-chairs are not ready to move in that direction until all the revenue issues are resolved on the statewide budget. Initially, I think the agents would have liked to have seen an increase in their base compensation rate with a corresponding increase in the sale of liquor and the price of liquor to fund that. But that's not on the table today.
Mr. Chair, is it the plan to work session this budget today, or we're going to hold this budget?
Oh, no, this budget will be held. Thank you, Senator. And that is a segue for Representative Johnson's question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I was just trying to figure out is if the OLCC has the wherewithal to arbitrarily increase the price of alcohol without consultation with the legislature, what effect that would have on the overall universe of money available for distribution for agent compensation. And I'm trying to see the correlation between arbitrary price increase and this universe of compensation.
And it's my understanding that, Representative Johnson, that if there was, in fact, an increase using the numbers which we've just looked at, if a 2% increase generated $10 million additional sales, and if that was nothing more than just an increase, in the cost of liquor, in the liquor stores from the Liquor Control Commission, that then they would have the ability to say, wait a minute, that is not an increase in volume, as is Budget Note 2 directs. Budget Note 2 actually examines the amount, those sales that exceed the annual forecast, less those variable costs, including the cost of goods sold. But, excuse me, but it's also anticipated that if that's as a result, and it's not anticipating any increases and the prices of alcohol. It's increasing. It's anticipated increase in the retail distribution of sales, retail sales of the bottles. The overall, either the numbers of bottles or the buy up, the increase in the boutique liquors that may be available.
I just want to follow this to make sure that
please.
I've got it, because the increase in price, if you're correct, would not drive this additional compensation, but an increase in volume would.
An increase of price, if it was a price increase that was effectuated by the agency to generate more general funds, could generate this, but that isn't what's anticipated that would fund the agent's increase. The agent's increase would be an increase in the total volume and an increase in buy-ups. That's my understanding.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, without an increase in the expenditure limitation, there is no distribution going to the agents.
Right.
The agency has to come back to the legislature or to the emergency board and explain why they want to pay more money to the agents or and in what methodology they're using to do that. So there is legislative oversight in approving.
And at that particular time, and seeking the authorization to make those distributions in accordance with Budget Note 2, then the agency could then identify how much of that may have been as a result of increases in volumes of sales and increases in buy-ups, and then be able to identify through their own formulas in conjunction with meetings with the agency advisory council how much of that increase is as a result of increases, if there have been any, of just brute increases per bottle of the sales price. Senator Winter?
I guess I'm trying to track all of this, and I'm having a real difficult time. One, there is the increase in volume, and two, you can increase in price, and three, we're going to come up with some kind of convoluted way of distributing those dollars based on some formula.
Well, the convoluted way already belongs to the OLCC.
OLCC. But it's just really interesting to me that on the one hand, on the committee that I'm on where I'm dealing with the issue of treating individuals with alcohol and those disabilities, and here I'm sitting here and we're talking about trying to encourage an increase in consumption and also trying to encourage the more higher priced products in order to somehow to because we don't approve or get at a fair compensation rate. I mean, because really that's what we're talking about, a fair and equitable compensation rate. That's what we heard all through the hearings, that the agents are experiencing inflationary costs, higher rents, higher this, and yet when you finish the bottom line, their bottom line is pretty skimpy, if none.
Senator Winters, I want to make absolutely certain that lest there be any misunderstanding of my position, my desire is, number one, that we not increase any per capita amounts of liquor consumption in the state of Oregon, that any increase come about as a result of potentially increase in the buy-ups, increases in the types of liquors that are being sold to the more boutique and the higher priced for the same amount of volume, and encourage that kind of consumption increases in terms of brute numbers of dollars. And then, of course, we will have a population increase. The population increase is anticipated in the governor's projected or in the OLCC's provided projected actual sales. And it's those annual forecasts to the extent that we exceed those annual forecasts and recognize that it is the agents who are making the sales that then exceed those annual forecasts. It's through their efforts, either through buy-ups or increasing the amounts of liquor per capita, that they would be given their consumption or their increase based upon the amounts of gross amounts of dollars collected over the forecasted amounts, annual forecasted amounts. Am I coming?
I hear what you're saying. It's not that I don't hear it. It's saying the onus is on the agent. And in this kind of an environment, you go out and you produce more. You know, basically that's what we're saying. You go out and you produce more, then we'll come up with a formula in which we will share some of that which you have produced. And my question still becomes that I go back to what Representative Johnson said, in every area you're not going to be able to probably meet those kinds of goals beyond the boutiques. Not every area in the state of Oregon do you have high volumes of boutique sales. So what happens to those agents that's out there over someplace in a gap where you've got a gasoline station in French Glen? Yes,
absolutely.
In French Glen. What happens? And I guess my concern is that they have to pay rent too. They have to have staffing. You know, they have overhead costs, just like those in the valley or in the metropolitan Portland area. And it causes, I think, it's worthy of discussion and some concerns that I have.
And I am concerned about them as well, Representative Senator Winters, because I guess my concern is that we do have those folks in rural Oregon that won't be able to share because they probably can't increase in boutique sales. In other words, the total amount of net volume increasing just without an increase in the actual liquid consumption. And the concern that I have, per capita consumption, the concern I have is that the agents advisory and the Liquor Control Commission will work with DISCUS and other of the major liquor distribution organizations to enhance our sales ability to do the necessary buy-ups to effectuate an increase in gross volume above and beyond the projection per capita projections which have been made, so that we get that additional dollar through the buy-ups as opposed to just brute number of gallons per individual sold. That's what I'm after, and I think that we'll probably need just a little bit of additional work on the bonus system, paying attention to a special caveat relative to micromanaging with regard to that. So it's now approaching 10:30. We are at budget note 2. I propose that we go ahead and carry over the Oregon Liquor Control Commission Senate Bill 5530 to Monday, to regular at 8:30 on Monday morning. Let's plan to come back, and we'll continue the work session again with an idea of receiving the balance of Legislative Fiscal Office's recommendation on the Senate Bill 5530. With that, we will stand adjourned until. Thank you very much. Thank you.